Tonight, we want to cover another subject in our series of Christian struggles, and as we discussed this morning in talking about self-control, I believe this is another lesson that is very applicable to us as God's children. Just to remind you very quickly, as we won't go over this, we go over it every time we begin this study, and we're using as a text the example of Mary and Martha in Luke chapter 10, when Jesus was in their home, and Martha was struggling to take care of the guest, and Mary was sitting at the feet of Jesus and listening to the things that Jesus had to say. And she needed help, and so she asked the Lord to compel Mary to come and help her. And again, Jesus made the statement in verse 41 of Luke chapter 10, that Martha, Martha, you are worried and troubled about many things. And again, it just meant that she was bothered. She was distracted. She was concerned about other things that may not have been important as the things that were going on. And so, in our lives as God's people, we are often distracted. And we are bothered by many different things that can happen in our everyday lives. In this particular series, I have tried to look at things that are things that we deal with on an everyday basis. Things that can happen to us as we live our lives here on earth, and things that we must contend with in order that we might be the kind of people that we can set the proper example, be the right influence, and be effective as one of God's children to be an example of a Christian. I believe tonight's subject, there is no other subject that has been brought to my attention more by people who want to not do what they know they need to do and understand their need to have God in their life, the need for them to be a Christian, and there are things that they understand. But one of the arguments that is often used, it's not an argument, it's an excuse, but an excuse that is often used is the hypocrisy of other Christians. And the argument goes something like this. Well, I don't need to be a Christian. I work with this fellow down at the mill, or I work with this fellow down at the factory, and he claims to be a Christian, and he does this, and he does that. And if that's what Christianity is all about, I don't need it. He believes he's a Christian and he does all those things. He's a hypocrite. And I don't want to be with hypocrites. And so I'm just not going to serve God. Well, again, that is missing the point. And even if what they say is true and the person is a hypocrite, that's not a reason for them not to do what they need to do and what they ought to do. I often look at this subject, and I've also had this discussion with brethren who become unfaithful. And when you go to try to encourage them and you try to bring them back, one of the things they often said, well, I'm not the only one that's got a problem. You got other people down there just as simple as I am, and they do just as much as I do, and you ought to be dealing with them as much as you're dealing with yourself. And I'm not just going to go down there, and I'm not going to be a member of a church that has hypocrites in it. Well, my argument, my answer to that has always been the same. Well, you know what? You can do that, and you can go and you can refuse to be there so you don't have to spend time with the hypocrite, and then you can spend all eternity with them in hell. So you can do one or the other. I just don't see the advantage of not being with them a little while than being with them for all eternity if they don't change. And so what do people mean when they say that we are a hypocrite? Now, this is one thing that Jesus dealt with a lot when he was upon this earth with the religious people in his day. He accused them of being great hypocrites. And so I want to talk about the struggle with hypocrisy, because it is a struggle that we can have if we're not very careful. Now, to understand hypocrisy, you have to understand what the meaning of the word is. It comes from a Greek word, and it means to denote a reply or an answer. Play acting. As actors spoke in dialogue, hence pretense, hypocrisy. It is translated hypocrisy in Matthew 23, verse 28. And if you really wanted a biblical commentary on hypocrisy, read Matthew chapter 23. That's Jesus' indictment against the Jews. Mark 12 and verse 15. And Luke chapter 12 and verse 1. And the passage that we'll read is in 1 Timothy chapter 4 in verse number 2. 1 Timothy chapter 4 in verse number 2. It says, speaking lies in hypocrisy, having their own conscience seared with a hot iron. Paul says a person can sear their conscience and delude themselves that they're something that they're not. And what they're doing, as this word suggests, is they are play acting. They are just going through an exercise of futility of acting like something that they are not. In James chapter 3 and verse number 17, there is a passage here that uses a form of the word hypocrisy. And we discussed this at some length when we discussed the book of James. In James chapter 3 and verse 17 it says, but the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy, good fruit, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now again, that just means that a person's actions and his conduct is genuine, it's real. It's without hypocrisy. It's not doing one thing and saying another. Now, a word that's really a close kin to hypocrisy, and the one that's used in the Bible more, is the word hypocrite. And so what I want you to remember here is to answer in dialogue, to pretense, to play act, because that's really what hypocrisy is. The word in the New Testament that's used more is the word hypocrite. It corresponds to the above primarily, denoting one who answers, a stage actor. It was a custom for Greeks and Roman actors to speak in large masks with mechanical devices for augmenting the force of their voice. Hence, the word became metaphorically to mean a dissembler, a hypocrite. It is found only in the synopsis and always used by the Lord 15 times in Matthew and elsewhere. And every time that the Lord uses it in the New Testament, in the synopsis, and what that means is in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, every time it's used is to show pretense and saying one thing and doing another. Jesus, in talking about putting on a mask, I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 23 and look at verse number 13. The Lord does not mince words here. He is very plain and very direct with his indictment of the religious leaders in his day. In Matthew 23 and verse 13, and this whole chapter is denoted to the hypocrisy of the Jews. And in Matthew 23 verse 13, Jesus said, "But woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you shut up the kingdom of heaven against man, and you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in." And notice what he says in verse number 3 of the same chapter. He says, "Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. But do not do according to their works, for they say and they do not do." Now that is a basic definition of a hypocrite. A hypocrite is one who claims to be something that he is not, claims to believe something that he does not, claims to act in a certain way and does not. In other words, it is play acting. It is putting on a charade. It is acting in a manner that is not consistent with the reality of their life. Here it appears with terrific irritation, save in the third and seven woes in Matthew 23. The verb is in the active form, means to separate slowly or slightly, subject to gradual inquiry. Then the middle was to make answer, to take up part on a stage, to act in a part. It was easy step to mean to feign, to pretend, to wear a mask, to act a hypocrite, to play a part. And really, that's what a hypocrite is. He's an actor. He's a pretense. He's for show. He's not genuine. It's not real. And there's no substance in his life. A middle voice, it means to decide, it means to speak, to act, to act under a false part. To act under a false part. To pretend. to take up another statement in reference to what one has decided for oneself, to make answers, speak on a stage, to persuade anyone to play a part, to stimulate, to feign, to pretend. If I had to put a definition that's easy for you to remember, here it is. It is to pretend to be something that you're not. That is hypocrisy, and that is being a hypocrite. For years, when I was a young man, my father had quite a difficult time in being faithful to the Lord. He was in and out of the church on a number of occasions. And I remember one day the men of the church, we didn't have elders at that time where I attended, and the men of the church came and they were about to withdraw from my father, and they came to encourage him and try to discuss with him his need to get his life right with God. And I think I was about 10. But I remember this vividly. And I remember them sitting in our living room, and I remember listening to this discussion, and I remember one of the men, who was a good friend of our families at the time, said, "Now, Gene," he says, "you know what you ought to do. You know what you're doing is wrong, and you know you need to be setting a better example here for your boys, and you need to be more concerned about their welfare and also your own welfare." And I remember what my dad said. He said, "You know what? You're absolutely right, but I'm not going to be a hypocrite. If I can't live the life, I'm not going to act like I can. I'm not going to act like I'm something and I'm not, because it's more destructive to the cause of Christ for me to play act and try to deceive myself and to deceive others." You know what? That might be respectable because he wants to do that, but that's not going to make him one whit any more lost because he doesn't want to play the part of a hypocrite. But you know what? It is absolutely true that there is more damage done to the cause of Christ by hypocrisy than any other thing that we can do. Because what it does is it gives solace to those looking for an excuse of why they don't need to obey God and put their life right with God. If they can convince themselves by looking at your life or my life that they're no better than us, and that they act just as good as we do, it gives them some form of security that they don't really need to change their life. Now again, that's not going to make it one whit better with them when they stand before God and say, "Well, I never saw the need to be a Christian because I never saw any really good examples of what it meant to be a real Christian." That won't wash with God, because whatever another person does is not an excuse for me to not do what I need to do. We have many people in the Lord's church, and I've even dealt with this here, where people get angry about something or get upset about something, and they're going to leave the Lord because of what somebody did or didn't do. Ladies and gentlemen, all that does is take it out on God. It's not God's fault. It's not God's fault, but He is the one that we take it out on. And so when we play the part of a hypocrisy, or when we play the part of a hypocrite, we're not just doing a disservice to ourselves, we're hurting the cause of Christ. We are hurting because we are an example, or we're supposed to be, to the world of what Christianity is all about. You know, we sing a song from time to time in the book called "The World's Bible." What is the world's Bible? You know, sometimes the only Bible another person sees is the example and the life of a Christian. That's as close as they ever get to God's Word. But what do they see? Remember in that song it says, "What if the lines are blurred? What if the line is crooked? What if it doesn't exemplify what it's supposed to?" You know who I would use as an example to this? God's people, the nation of Israel. What did God want His people to do in order to help those who had no relationship with God and did not know God? How did He want them to learn about God? By the example and the conduct of His children. by their example, by their faithfulness, by their love for God, and by the life that they lived, they would be an influence for those people to teach them about the knowledge of the true and living God. But you know, a terrible thing happened. The influence went the wrong way. Instead of them influencing the world to live for God, they got their influence from the world, and they began to live like the pagans. They began to live like those disbelievers. And eventually it cost them their relationship with God. Now let's move forward and talk for a few moments about how we can avoid this struggle with hypocrisy. Number one, the way to avoid hypocrisy is seeing ourselves as we really are. You know what that means? That means honesty. That means to be honest with ourselves. To be honest in our relationship with God. And sometimes we struggle to see the real me. Sometimes we struggle to see us as we really are. Sometimes we're blinded and we can't see. Is one who does what he condemns. Look at Luke chapter 13, 18. In Luke chapter 13, 18, Luke 13, 18, then he says, what is the kingdom of God like? And what shall I compare it to? It is like a mustard seed, which is a man looks and puts in the garden. He puts in the garden, and it grew, and it became a large tree, and the birds nest in its branches. And again, he said, to what should the kingdom of heaven be? It's like a woman took three measures of meal till it was all leavened. And you know what? This has nothing to do with what I wanted to say. Well, you put it in there, Keith, so you made a mistake. Well, let me give you a biblical example of hypocrisy by an apostle. Galatians 2. This is a biblical example of hypocrisy. You know, it bothers me that I put that in there. It's Luke 3:8. Let me read Luke 3:8 to show you I was on the right path. Therefore, bear fruits worthy of repentance. And do not begin to say to yourself, we have Abraham as our father, for I say to you that even Abraham is to raise up children from these stones. You know, the Jews, they took a great deal of stock in that they were descendants of Abraham. They said, we're descendants of Abraham. We have this relationship with Abraham. And we're God's chosen people. You know what Jesus said? You're not living like it. You're not acting like Abraham. You don't have the faith of Abraham. You claim to have this relationship with Abraham, but yet you don't have his faith. You don't have the example that he left. And so they were hypocrites. But let me give you the biblical example. Remember Peter? What did Peter do? Who preached the first gospel sermon to the Gentiles? Peter did. Remember that little thing that Peter was out there on the roof? He was praying. They were getting down, getting ready to eat, and he was hungry. And the Lord dropped this great sheet in front of him, and there was all these animals on it. And he said, rise, Peter, kill and eat. Peter said, oh no, Lord, nothing unclean has ever passed my lips. I'm not going to do that. And the Lord said, don't you call what I have cleansed unclean. And the Bible says he did that three times. And while he was trying to figure out what that meant, Cornelius had sent some men because God had told him through an angel to send for Peter, and he would tell him words by which he could be saved. And then Peter was spoke to by an angel, and the angel said, you go with these men, nothing doubting. Now, before I read what he did in Galatians 2, let me read to you what he told Cornelius in Acts 10, 34 and 35 of that sermon. Then Peter opened his mouth and said, in truth, I perceive that God shows no partiality. For in every nation, whoever fears him and works righteousness is accepted by him. Now, did Peter understand that the Gentile was now going to be accepted by God just like the Jew? Yes, he knew that. And in Acts 11, when he has to answer the Sanhedrin, and when he has to go and answer to the elders in Jerusalem, he defends what he did by recounting the vision that he had, and that now God had accepted the Gentiles just like the Jews. Now, did Peter know that? Yes, Peter knew that. But what did he do in Galatians 2? What did Galatians 2, verse 11? Here's what he did. Now, when Peter had come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face because he was to blame. For when certain men came from James, he would eat with the Gentiles. But when they came, now who is they? They are the Jews. They are the Jews. When they came, he withdrew himself, separated himself, fearing those that were of the circumcision. And the rest of the Jews also played the hypocrite with him, so that even Barnabas was carried away with their hypocrisy. But when I saw that they were not straightforward about the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter before them all, if you, being a Jew, live in the manner of the Gentiles and not as the Jews, why do you compel the Gentiles to live as the Jews? You know why Paul rebuked Peter? Because he was a hypocrite. Because he knew the Gentiles were now accepted by God. But yet when those of the circumcision came in, fearing what they might think, he separated himself, did not participate with them, and because of his example, Barnabas played the part of a hypocrite also. And you see, this is one who does what he knows to be wrong, and yet leads others to do the same. Now, Peter knew better. But Peter was fearful of what men thought instead of doing what he knew God wanted him to do. That's hypocrisy. And that's somebody that doesn't see himself as he really is. It is one who sees others' faults and not his own. You remember Jesus talked about this in Matthew chapter 7. Remember what he said? Look at verse 7, chapter 7, verse 2. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye? Do not consider the plank that is in your own eye. Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own. Hypocrite! First remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. You ever met people who can tell you everything you're doing wrong? They can tell you everything that's wrong in your life and how to fix it. But they can't see the forest for the trees when it comes to their life. They can't see the truth about the inconsistency in their own life because they play the part of a hypocrite. Now, many people misunderstand this passage. I had this passage quoted to me many times by saying, well, you see, you can't judge me. That's not what this passage is about. The Bible tells us that we are to make righteous judgment. It's not telling us that we can't judge others. You know, Jesus would go on to say in this chapter, by their fruits you shall know them. If I should know them by their fruits, then I'm going to have to make a judgment about their fruits. That's not what this passage is about. This passage is about hypocritical judging. To condemn someone else when you're doing something as equally wrong and yet getting on them that they need to correct their life, that's hypocrisy. Now, here's the mistake that some brethren make. Some instead say, well, if I do anything wrong, then I can't correct somebody else doing something wrong. Brethren, if that's true, we can't correct anybody. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about hypocrisy. It's talking about knowing that what I'm doing is wrong and yet pointing out to somebody else doing something wrong that his wrong is greater than my wrong. That makes me a hypocrite. And you know what, brethren? That will condemn us before God. You know what? I need to get my own life in order. You know, we use a term sometimes. We say people that live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. And you know what? That's a pretty good saying. It doesn't mean that I should not and I cannot correct my brother or sister that's in sin until I have no sin in my life. That's not what it means. If I had to wait for that, then they'd just be lost. I could never correct them because I'd make mistakes. But what it does mean is that I should be honest enough and I should be genuine enough that if I've got faults in my own life, let me first deal with them, and then it will make me much more acceptable and probably much more successful in helping somebody else get their life straightened up if I first get my life straightened up. You know what? I'm not going to have much credibility if I go to tell somebody that they need to do a better job of being faithful to the Lord if I don't do a very good job of being faithful to the Lord myself. Then I'm not going to have any credibility. And so I need to be consistent. And I need to be sure that I'm not violating the very thing that I'm trying to correct. That makes me a hypocrite. Is one who's more concerned about how he looks to others than how he looks to God. Jesus dealt with this later in Matthew 23 and verse 28. In Matthew 23, verse 28, it says, "Even so you outwardly appear to be righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness." You know, some people put on a good show. They want everybody to see how pious they are, how religious they are, how faithful they are to the Lord. But you know what? Don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. It's important that we assemble with the saints. It's important that you're here to encourage each other and to give worship to God. But the real truth of your Christianity is not seen in this building. What you really are and what your relationship to God is really demonstrated when you get out of this building. Because that's when people see the real you. Let me give you an illustration. There was a man, when I was in Las Vegas, that pestered this fella he worked with to come to a gospel meeting. Asked him every time we had a gospel meeting. And so finally, one night, this fella came. And lo and behold, the night he comes is the night that this fella isn't there. He's not there. He was attending a ball game with one of his grandchildren, and he wasn't there. Well, I didn't find that part out till later. But I'm standing there in the back, and I'm greeting the visitors, and I'm talking to this fella, and he says, does this person go here? He gave me his name. I said, yeah, he's a member here. He said, he's a member here? You mean he's a Christian? I said, well, yeah, he's part of our family here. Yeah, he's a member of the church. He's been here since I've been here. Why, that guy tells the filthiest stories at work. He's got the foulest mouth. Are you sure we're talking about the same fella? Boy, I had egg all over my face. What does that do to the cause of Christ? What does that do? You see, you're not going to be judged, and I'm not going to be judged, by what other people think of my Christianity. I'm going to be judged by what God knows about my Christianity. God knows if I'm genuine or not. God knows if what I do is for the right reason. God knows if I'm just putting on a show. And I tell people all the time, and you've heard me say it from this pulpit, if you're play-acting and be a Christian, you're a fool. You are a genuine, bona fide fool. Because you cannot fool God. And He's the one you have to answer to. And you could fool everybody in the church. You could fool your friends. You could fool your family. But you will never, ever fool God. Because He knows the truth. He knows the truth. And so, we need to see ourselves as we really are. Is one whose heart's not right. Remember what Jesus said about the Jews? Look at Matthew 15. This is a passage that you know very well. In Matthew, the 15th chapter, He talked about those people who worshipped Him. Listen to what He says in Matthew 15, verse 7. He said, "Hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you. These people draw near to me with their lips, they honor me with their mouth, but their heart is far from me. And in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrine the commandments of man." You know, there's a lot of people who claim to love God, who claim that they love His church. They love the Bible. They love the truth. But they do not practice it. They do not follow it. And they do not love Him as much as they contend, because they're a one thing on Sunday and they live a different way every other day of the week. That's hypocrisy. And that does nothing to gain you salvation. Nothing. You see, the real tale and the real truth of the matter of our relationship to God is really what we do outside of this place. You know, it's easy to put on a good front here. You're around people of like precious faith. You're in God with your brethren. You're around other people who are Christians. It's easy to put on the good front. It's easy to do the right thing. But the real test comes is when, let me give you an illustration. You know who would be the best judge of whether your Christianity is genuine? Ask your children. Ask your children. They see you live every day. They know you better than probably anybody else. Ask them. Ask your good friends. Ask your neighbors. If I were to ask your neighbor, "Do you know your neighbor's a Christian?" What would they tell me? What would they tell me? You see, brethren, we need to understand that, you know what? People are just looking for an excuse. And the greatest excuse they use is the inconsistency of God's people. Now, we're not talking about being perfect. God's not saying that. But I'm saying when we know that we're not doing right, and we know that we're not living the way we should, and yet we profess that we are, we're not just deceiving ourselves. We're deceiving everybody that watches us live. And we're doing a lot of harm to the cause of Christ. And so we need to be honest with ourselves to know exactly what we are. You know, in this example that I gave, He was concerned with what the Jews thought. He didn't see himself as Paul did. He didn't see himself. Peter did not see himself as Paul saw him. He saw himself much differently, but Peter was wrong because he knew better. He knew better. He knew what the truth was about the Gentiles. He knew about what the relationship to God was. He knew what his duty was to them. He knew that. And Paul knew that he knew it. And that's why he rebuked him. Because what he did was a public thing. And he didn't do what was right. And so sometimes we get more concerned with what others think. But again, my brethren, remember this. You're not going to stand before your brother. You're not going to stand before me. You're going to stand before God. And God knows the real you, and He knows the real me. And God's not going to make a mistake about this. God's going to do exactly what we've done in our lives, for what reason, and how we've done it. And so the first thing about struggling in hypocrisy is struggling to see ourselves as we really are. It takes real, bona fide honesty to really look at your life and to see if you equal what you claim to be. You claim to be a child of God. You know, there was a gospel preacher who also was a lawyer. His name was Roy Coghill. And he had a lesson I've listened to it a couple of times. It was called, "If There Was a Trial to Convict You of Being a Christian, Would There Be Enough Evidence to Convict You?" It's a really good lesson. Would there be enough evidence to convict others that I'm a Christian by the life that I live? That's seeing myself as I really am. Second, we need to struggle in dealing with this. You know, keeping it covered, that's not going to help you. Hiding it is not going to help you. That's what Achan tried to do. In Joshua chapter 7, that's what Achan did. He tried to hide it. He buried it in his tent. He took it, nobody saw him, and so nobody's the wiser. Really? God knew it. And because of Achan's greed, what happened? 36 men died in a battle because he was covetousness, and he did what he thought he could cover and hide. Didn't David do that? Isn't that what David did with Bathsheba? Oh, when he found out she was with child, he had to fix that. He's a king of Israel. He can't leave that kind of example. And so he's going to cover it up. So he goes through all this rigmarole to get Uriah to sleep with his wife, and that didn't work. He tried it again. He got him a little drunk. That didn't work. And then finally he had to send a letter to Joab to have him put out in the forefront of the hottest battle, pull away from him, let him be killed in battle, let the period of mourning go by, then call Bathsheba to be his wife, marry her, and then he has a child and nobody knows. But do you remember what Nathan, that little story that Nathan told David? And remember how angry David got at that man that took that poor little lamb from that man that only had one and killed it to give it to the stranger? And Nathan said, "What do you think about that?" And David said, "That man ought to die. That man ought to have to return fourfold what he did for that man." And you know what? Whenever I read this story, I can see David. When Nathan said, "David, you're the man. That's what you did." And you know what? David's life was never the same from that point on. But he thought nobody knew. Yes, somebody knows. You can't cover it up. What about your conscience? What are you going to do with your conscience? Turn to John 8, verse 9. Remember when they brought that lady that was caught in the act of adultery? They wanted to trap Jesus, and Jesus kind of ignored them. And he said, "Whoever's without sin, let him cast the first stone." What happened? What happened when he said that? Turn over to John chapter 8. And then those who heard it in verse 9, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning with the oldest, even to the last, and Jesus was left alone with the woman standing in their midst. They were convicted by their conscience. But you know, there's something about your conscience that you need to know. In Romans chapter 2, verse 15, the Bible says, "Who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness with them, between themselves and their thoughts, either excusing or accusing them." But you see, conscience can be dulled and it can be seared. Paul said that in 1 Timothy 4. He said, what's that conscience? That's that inner voice in your head that says, "Keith, you shouldn't be doing this. You know this is wrong. You know that this is not what God would have you to do." And it just nags at you. And you lay in the bed at night. And you know there's things in your life that you need to correct. And you can't sleep. And you're restless. But you fight it. and you fight it. And pretty soon, it doesn't hurt as bad. And pretty soon, it doesn't hurt as often. And pretty soon, it doesn't bother you at all. You know what that happens? You've seared your conscience. You know what? If I ever walk away from the Lord, and that could happen, but if I would ever walk away with the Lord, the knowledge that I have would never give me any peace. Would it? When I lay there late at night and think about what's waiting me if I don't make my life right, I'm one miserable person, ain't I? But you let that dull your conscience, and pretty soon it won't matter. Have you ever wondered why somebody who needs to obey the gospel can hear invitation after invitation and it never move them? It's because they don't think they're lost, or they think they have plenty of time. And the more they listen to it, the duller that it hits them. You see, that's the danger of putting things off, because it can dull your senses. That's the danger. That's the danger and the risk that you take. What about your influence? What about your influence? You know what? We think we can hide anything, don't we? Not in this day and time, folks. Not with the internet, not with Twitter, not with Instagram, you name it, social media, you're not going to hide anything. You do something and somebody's going to put it somewhere so people can see it. You're not going to hide anything. And then people get themselves involved in things in their marriages and think nobody, you know, it's inevitable. You do something you're not supposed to do, you're going to run into somebody that knows you. You're going to run into them. And they're going to say, who is he with? Who is that? And you know what you're going to do? You're going to destroy your influence. Because they're going to see you for what you are. And you know what? I want you to read with me a passage in the book of Numbers. And I have this passage underlined in my Bible. And I read it a lot, because it is so true. In Numbers 32, in verse number 24, here's what it says. Verse 23. But if you do not do so, then take note, you have sinned against the Lord, and be sure your sin will find you out. You're going to get away with it? Nobody's going to find out? Nobody's ever going to know. That's what we think. And today, oh, it's easy. You get on the computer. You get in the privacy of your own home. You get in these chat rooms. You can go to these sites and nobody's going to know. It's not going to be on your television cable bill. Nobody's going to be in your home. You're there all by yourself. Nobody's going to know. Really? Really? You're going to destroy your influence. And what you're also going to do is you're going to destroy your soul. And it doesn't matter if anybody doesn't find out. Because God knows. And you're going to have to answer to God. Being honest and honorable. You know, one of the things that we're to do as Christians, we're to be honest. How are we going to be honest if we're not even honest with ourselves? You know, you got to be dishonest with yourself. To pretend to be something you're not even being honest with yourself. You're not being honorable. We're to be honorable. One of the characteristics we're supposed to have as a Christian is we're to be men and women of honor. We're not honorable if we're not even honorable with ourselves. You know, you're going to have trouble with the Lord at judgment. Because the Bible said we're going to give an account of everything we've done in the body, whether it be good or whether it be bad. 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 10. Romans 2 says, we're either going to get tribulation, anguish, and wrath, or we're going to get mercy, grace, and peace. We're going to get one or the other, and it depends on what we've done. And another thing that you're going to have trouble with, you're going to throw away. You're going to throw away your relationship with God, and it's going to bring you nothing at the end. In 1 Peter chapter 2, and verse number 1, and you know, Peter is one of the apostles that says a lot about this, about hypocrisy, about throwing it away. And in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 1, he says, therefore, laying aside all malice, all deceit, all hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking. Do you remember that he also wrote in 2 Peter that those who go back into sin, it's worse for them than at the beginning? It would have been better had they never known the truth than to know it and to depart from it. You know what? How does a person who is playing a role, who is being a hypocrite, how does he have any peace in his mind? How does he lay his head on his pillow and not worry about it if he never wakes up again? About what's going to happen to him. You see, you're throwing it away. You could come every time these doors are open. You could come to every time. You could take the Lord's Supper. You could give of your meat. You could do all the outward things that everybody can see. And yet you're fooling yourself, and you're not living the life. You're not doing what you should do. And in the end, you're going to lose everything. You're going to lose your soul. Is it worth it? To me, it's a no-brainer. It's not worth it. And last, you struggle for those influenced by hypocrisy. You know what? I've had a lot of discussions with men and women who faith was destroyed by the hypocrisy of brethren. It's just a fact. I've dealt with it. I've had to go to people who make the, it ain't making it any better for them. They're not going to be able to give that excuse to God. It won't wash. But the fact of the matter is, their desire and influence to live for God was destroyed by the hypocrisy of some of their brethren. Now, whether you believe that or not, your life and my life can have an influence on other people. Family and friends. Some are influenced to do the same. Some can be asked what Barnabas did. Barnabas did the same thing Peter did. He followed the example of Peter. It was frustrated at his inconsistency. Paul was frustrated that Peter was so inconsistent with his life. And he was frustrated in how he dealt with it. But you know what? When Peter was rebuked, he understood and pointed out that his soul was in danger. Why did he do that? Because he loved him. He did it because he loved him. He reminded his actions did not fit the gospel. You're not living what you claim to be. That's what Paul told him. You're not living. You know that God accepts the Gentile. You're not living your faith. He reminded them, contrary to know, and to believe and teach that he's not practicing what he knows to be true. And he showed the absurdity of his actions in verse 17. And in verse 21, he shows how frustrated he is because he has not received the grace of God. He received it in vain. And so here's my point. How did Peter receive Paul's rebuke? It was very public. He put him right out in front of everybody and corrected him. What did Peter do? Well, you know, the Bible record really doesn't tell us. But you know, if you read further on, in 2 Peter 3, verse 15, a book that was written by the Apostle Peter later, you know what he says? He makes a reference to Paul, and he calls Paul his beloved brother in the faith. You know what that tells me? He accepted the rebuke, and he corrected it. Because he knew that his brother loved him. That's what it implies. And so, here's what I'm telling you. If somebody comes to you and they love you enough and they care about you and they come to you to try to help you correct behavior that you know is not right with God, that you know is inconsistent with what you claim to be and putting your soul in spiritual jeopardy, instead of getting angry, instead of getting mad, instead of attacking that person, thank God that you have a brother or sister who loves you that much, that will point out the hypocrisy in your life. You know, nobody wants to be wrong. Nobody likes to be corrected. But brethren, sometimes we need it because of what's at stake. And so, the struggle with hypocrisy. You have to see yourself as you really are. You have to struggle to deal with it. Because if you try to hide it, you're always going, you know, it's got to be awful to live a double life. You got to always look over your shoulder. You got to always look and see, make sure that nobody sees what you're doing. What a difficult life to live. And then, what are you doing with the influence that you can have as a Christian? You're destroying it. But you're not just destroying it for yourself. You're destroying it for others. Because you know what, brethren? Believe this or not, you influence people by your life. Whether you believe that or not, it's a fact. There are people who watch you live every day. There's people that know you, that interact with you, that know you and know about you as a person. And know that you're a member of the church. Know that you're a churchgoer. Know that you're a Christian. They know that. And they watch you live and they watch you how you conduct your life. And if you're not what you profess to be, then you are destroying your influence and your ability to lead that person to Christ. God doesn't want us to do that. Because that's counterproductive for us and for Him. And as I told you a moment ago, even if people use that excuse, and it's a true excuse, it won't save them in the end either. Because they'll be lost, and I'll be lost. Because I'm not what I claim to be. Now, do not misunderstand me tonight. I'm not talking about perfection. I'm not talking that we never make a mistake. I'm talking about putting on an act just for the fact for everybody to think that I'm something that I'm not. You're not fooling anyone. Sooner or later, as the book of Numbers says, your sin will find you out. And even if it doesn't in this life, when you stand before God, it will. Please take your song books and turn to the song that Brother Mel has selected. Zion's Call, I believe, is a song. If you're here and you're not a Christian, we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to become one. And if you are one and you are living the life of a hypocrite, you're not what you claim to be. You're not being what you profess to be. If you need us to pray with you and for you, that God would strengthen you and forgive you, we're here to do that. If there's something that you need to take up with God, you take it up with God. But brethren, understand that this is a real struggle that can happen to any of us. That we could struggle in not doing what we know we ought to do, and then that makes us a hypocrite. Let us not live the life of a hypocrite. Let us live the life that we profess to be as people of God who love Him, love His church, and want to go to heaven for all eternity. To do that, we have to be consistent in our lives. If we can help you in any way, we bid you to come forward as together we stand, as we sing.